So this Friday, something that a lot of people have waited for is finally going to happen. The documentary Triumph Rock and Roll Machine premieres at the Toronto International Film Festival. Rick Emmett is with us. First and foremost, congratulations on this. I mean, everything that Sam, Mark, the Banger Films team put out is incredible. And this looks nothing short of that. And how cool is it that it's actually premiering in your backyard?
Yeah, it's pretty nice, for sure. And I mean, there's so much stuff that's kind of full circle. When Triumph was kind of making its big step into the big time, we played a gig at Ontario Place, and the American labels came up to see us there. And that the gig at Ontario Place led to the RCA deal. But you know, so now we're going back down there, and of course now it's the Budweiser stage and the RBC this and that, and you know. So, you know, and of course, COVID makes it so that who knows what we're dealing with. But the thing, it's, yes, as you say, finally, here we go. And to get to see Sam and Mark again, and just to sort of maybe get to see some fans and go, hey, you know, here's the story, finally. It's an epic that took many years to get to the screen, but here it is.
And again, this was shot back in, largely, at least the performance and the fan interaction part was shot back in November of 2019. You were in the middle of a hiatus. Obviously, everybody was on a high after that. 4 months later, we know what happened. We don't have to revisit it. Before we go back to November 16th, 2019, all the events that led up to that moment, the couple of years that have passed, September 3rd marked 33 years since the wrap of that 1988 tour. Kingswood Stage, Canada's Wonderland, kind of ironic looking back, considering how much of a roller coaster that you three were on, and shortly thereafter, poof, done. So as you said, finally, the story is coming out. I know that it was at a time that was pre-social media, before we could, you know, figure out what our favorite artists, celebrities, et cetera, were having for breakfast. I don't think a lot of people really understood behind the scenes what you three were going through as a group and as individuals. How important for you three, for you, for Mike, for Gil to tell, how important was it for you to tell this story?
Well, you know, the story of a band is not just the story of how it broke up, you know, but of course, you know, the sort of keen interest that a lot of folks would have is based on the fact that it was, and of course there's a nice story that can be told, which is a dramatic hook. Oh, at the height of their powers, you know, Rick left, you know, which is not exactly true. You know, it makes for good copy, but you know, I didn't see the band as it being at its, you know, height. I saw the roller coaster ride, to me, was, you know, slowly but surely coming back into the station, and I was going, I'm not sure I want to hang around for the, you know, for when it gets kind of bitter and ugly. So, but you know, having said all that, when a documentary is done, the guys from Banger, they're looking at a whole story. They're looking at, you know, how did the band start and all the years that led up to, you know, and then okay, we have this breakup, and then, but then what's the story we're going to tell now? And so this whole thing of cooking up a gig in a warehouse so that the most loyal fans could fly in, like, that is maybe one of the biggest things that happens in the documentary, is that moment of being on stage for these folks and kind of tricking them that, you know, the band, they're not sure the band's going to play, and then the scrim drops and there we were, and it was just an unbelievable thing. But there's other stuff too, and you know, I hate to sort of rattle on, because I know you probably have lots of questions you want to ask, but one of the sweet things for me of the story being told is that you're getting to see these guys that kind of started something from nothing and built it up to a point, and we had a kind of a brothership, a fraternity, a thing that made this happen, and a sense of humor that we shared you know, on a really nice, deep level. And then it went to crap, you know, and then we kind of had to go through some, you know, my brother was passing away from cancer. And so there was this heavy stuff that was going on in my life. And then we were able to kind of figure out, all right, let's figure out how we'd be better men about this, to find a higher purpose common ground between us. And so the documentary kind of shows that, you know, the tears and the heartbreak, and then coming back from that to a point where it's like, now we're sitting around shooting a movie and we're laughing and giggling again, like we did when we were, you know, 23 and didn't have a pot to piss in, you know?
It's amazing watching some of the footage in the trailer and seeing you guys then, you know, quote unquote, at the height, and then seeing you all these years later, and you could tell the camaraderie isn't lost. And it's like a family. You know, you can have an argument with a sibling or a family member, but at the end of the day, you get back to the roots of who you are as a group, your family. And that's what I love seeing so much in this. I remember watching the trailer for the first time and I got a little bit choked up. There's a piece with you where you talk about that guilt. And I know that you've said before that, you know, you hate delving back to the past, because when you drudge that up, those memories still sting. So rather than go that direction, did you find this process personally to be a little bit kind of therapeutic in a way of kind of collectively dealing with everything and just saying, all right, let's move on from it?
Yeah, no doubt. The thing about the past is, and especially because Triumph was a big thing. Triumph was kind of about the big gesture, the big, you know, flashpots and lasers and, you know, flamethrowers. And it was big. It was a larger than life kind of thing. So when you're trying to leave the past behind, and I've used this metaphor before in conversations, but I kind of feel a little like Indiana Jones. He's running and that giant ball is rolling down behind him. And it's, you can't escape your past. Like it's catching up to you. And it was big. It was, and unless, you know, I had gone on to a career where I'd created something even bigger, you know, there was no way that I was going to be able to escape that. And that's not what I wanted to go on to anyways. I was going on to things that were kind of a little more humble and modest and smaller and, you know, classical guitar records and jazz guitar records. Like, nobody sells as few guitar records as jazz guitar players do, you know? So I was joining fraternities where, and I've just put out a poetry book. I just found something where I can actually sell even less. Yeah. So, you know, that I, for sure, I was never going to out gesture this giant thing that I'd been a part of. So then it was like acceptance. Okay. So if it's going to be there, how do I make it be a part of my life without it taking over, you know, my current life? How do I make it so that I figure something out with the other guys where we're dealing with this? And so, you know, we did the documentary, you know, there's been all of these things. We just got an award for the Heavy Metal Hall of Fame, you know, like there's these things that happen and you just kind of go, okay, you know, great, you know. So it's kind of like maybe we're not on the giant roller coaster anymore, but now we're on the little ride where it's like the spinning teacups for the little kids. we're still having some fun, but it's not as dangerous.
Well, I think now you're enabled the opportunity. Hindsight is always, as they say, 2020, but you're able to, so to speak, see the pitch come in a little bit slower. And you've got a few more miles under your belt, so you've got that different perspective. And as you said, you know, this Sunday, the Metal Hall of Fame induction ceremony, there's the Canadian Music Hall of Fame, the Canadian Music Industry Hall of Fame, Canada's Walk of Fame, this documentary, 3+ decades after it was, it's, you know, arguably worst, it's its best. And it's best for all of us, not just for you guys, but for us as fans. We have been able to, over the last 10 to 15 years, by advent of social media, telecasts, et cetera, we've been able to enjoy these fine moments with you. And it is such a treat. And I go back to, I'm not sure who said it in the trailer, but there was something that really sung to me, because Triumph were described as the good guys in an era that was meant for the dirtbags. And I go back to how you guys put together a show, not out of gratuity, not out of self-service, but for your fans. You talk about the pyro, you talk about the lights, you know, people everywhere, industry-wide. I mean, your peers were adoring everything that you were doing to the point that they wanted your lighting crews. You were always there for your fans, and you've always continued to be there in some shape, way, or form as individuals. Their connection to you has been something to behold, but also your connection to them. So again, coming full circle to that moment where the scrim drops on November 16th and they see you, you see them, cameras all over. Describe that feeling.
Well, it's indescribable. You know, what you're asking me is the same question, like, you know, the Olympics and the guys won the gold medal and they stick a mic in his face and say, so how does it feel? He goes, I got no words, you know. Guy wins the Stanley Cup and they go, what does it feel like? He goes, I'm not sure. I'll figure this out a few months from now. You know, it was unbelievable. Like being on the stage when the scrim dropped was like, I said this in another interview, it was like standing in a jet engine. It was the amount of energy that was just flowing, you know, it was crazy. And I, you know, based on what you just said, Jay, I just want to make this point. There was a time, and it was around 1978, so the band started 75, and around 78, and I wrote this song, Laying on the Line, and I brought it to the guys, and they went, yep, you know, this is a big step for us. This is going to be great. And so, you know, that happened. But I didn't feel like I was 100% there yet. But when we went in and we started doing the Just a Game album shortly after, I started writing Hold On to Your Dreams. And I went, I think I've figured this out. I think Triumph is about those people out there in the seats. And it's about something positive and something like a goodness that's of the human spirit, and trying to find that commonality between the music and the band and what the band did and the people in the seats. And so I went to the guys and, you know, I said, this is where I think we're headed. I think I've figured this out. They'd called the band Triumph. I hadn't, you know, they'd already picked the name when I joined, but I went, no, I think this is it. I think this is what it's going to be. We're going to be the band that, you know, and in the first stage, it was Hold On to Your Dreams. But then it was like Fighting the Good Fight, and Never Surrender, and, you know, the magic power of the music. Like, it was these things that gave the band like a soundtrack that was a real thing that connected us to radio, to the kids in the seats, like, you know, and that became our thing. So when we played the Us Festival in 83, and you know, as you said, scumbags, dirtbags, what did you call them, Jay? Yeah.
Basically described as an era that was meant for the dirtbags.
Okay, yeah. And so, you know, we're on this bill with Motley Crue and Van Halen and Ozzy and Judas Priest. Now, I've met those people. They're perfectly fine people. They're very nice folks. You know, they're not, you know, but there is a thing where part of what they project is that, you know, dirt bag kind of, hey, we're not living for tomorrow. We're living for this moment. And who cares about tomorrow? Let's party, you know. And that heaviness, like, you know, Judas Priest at the Oz Festival, they ride on stage on Harleys, you know, like, okay. You know, and the Van Halen guys, they got so hammered through the partying of the day that by the time they got to the stage, it was a little loosey goosey, you know. but nevertheless, you know, I think Wozniak and the people that had put that show together, they went, no, we want Triumph. They're kind of the band in white. They're kind of the you know, the good guys. And a guy like Wozniak goes, oh, I like. Good guys. Like, I want a little of that in my show. If I'm going to blow, you know, $20 million, then I'm not going to get something on there that I like. And so I think that was also a little bit of a calling card for the band over time, that we were, you know, kind of the band in white, the good guys.
Well, again, you know, there are a ton of auto manufacturers out there. There's a vehicle for everybody. Everybody has to have their own brand of vehicle, and everybody gets a lane to drive in. And you certainly found yours. That was my diplomatic way to sum that up.
Good. Very, very good.
You guys have had a phenomenal year to this point. The 40th anniversary box set for Allied Forces is incredible. The fact that you were Record Store ambassadors for Canada was just, and at that time, was so incendiary. It was perfect. We live in the most uncertain of times on a host of different levels that we don't necessarily have to dive into in this conversation. But when I think about January 2019, the end of that month when you decided to go on hiatus. You weren't planning on it this being this long, were you? Like, I mean, it's been a couple of years plus, almost 3 years since you've, you know, been able to get out there and tour. And obviously, I'm remiss if I don't ask this question, because Triumph fans, you know, worldwide will hate me. Has this process, going back to November 19, rekindling with Gil and Mike, has it made you guys think about possibly being, you know, together as a collective, either back in the studio to jam some stuff out, maybe, you know, work on a couple of records? Because I got to believe, you know, it, at the very least, you've got, what, 20,000 songs written in your head now over the last 18 months?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, I did a record in 2016 where I had Gil and Mike play on a track. I made it for Mascot Records in Europe, and it was a song in there called "The Grand Parade."
And, was that Gil, was that Resolution 9? Was that?
Yeah, Res 9. Okay. Yeah. And Gil played drums and Mike played bass, and it was a really cool thing. The song itself was a really cool thing that sort of made everything come back around, you know, and. For me, one of the big moments personally in Triumph was the song Suitcase Blues on Just a Game had been this thing where, you know, it was not the kind of song that belonged on a hard rock band's album. But the other guy said, you know what, Rick, it's such a good tune. We want to put it on there, you know. So Grand Parade kind of was this thing of coming full circle again. And that happened in 2016. But to your question, I think we're at a point where nobody ever rules anything out. It just depends, you know. And I'm not sure any of us are young and spry enough to think, oh, yeah, we'll go out and play, you know, 4 shows a week, 90 minutes a night. Like, I don't think that's going to happen, you know. But, you know, if some things came along and they seemed like they were logical, we might bite into that. Now, talking about this hiatus, I mean, I was never going to retire from being creative. That was never going to happen. Like, I was always going to be figuring out how to keep my hand in and to be feeling. So I put songs out on my website. I wrote a book of poetry, which it's coming out this month and on ECW Press. It's called Reinvention, which is, that's what I do. I reinvent myself, you know. And so that's never going to go away. You know, I there were two poems that I had worked up for the book, and they were clearly going to be song lyrics. They weren't poems. They were turning themselves into lyrics. And I went, okay, I'm not going to fight City Hall. I'll write some music for these. And then I recorded them. And so these videos, and one just came out last week, one's coming out next week. And, you know, they're just going out on social media. People can see me with my beard, you know, playing my tune, and I'm coming full circle to being the guy that I was when I was a teenager playing, you know, coffee houses when I was 16, you know, like, and so in that giant picture, you know, now I'm coming full circle back to that. That was before I was in Triumph and wearing, you know, striped spandex pants and, you know, leaping over flash pots, you know, and having that kind of crazy chapter in my life. And, you know, if that kind of thing, like, obviously, when I make a poetry book deal with ECW, they go, oh, well, can we put a memoir in the contract? Like, will you do a memoir? I go, yeah, okay, yes. You know, I'd like to bite on that and chew on that. Because, and here's another angle of things, Jay, you know, Banger and you know, Triumph, the Rock and Roll Machine, you're getting one picture of it. You're getting, you know, Sam and Mark's take on it. You're getting the other guys' influence on what the story is. It's the story of three guys and the thing that Sam and Mark have seen and put together. It's not necessarily my perspective. My perspective and my memoir, I'll get to choose which perspective. And that's artistically, creatively, that's a slightly different thing. That I find that an interesting thing to be taking on, you know, like, whereas, do I want to try and go out and see if I can't fit into my spandex pants? And no, like, I really don't want to could I even sing at that same, like the songs would have to be down a fourth, you know, like I'd have to take two songs and then I'd have to sit on a chair for 10 minutes, you know, like they would, we'd have to figure it out, you know, like I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And in a way, I think it's kind of goofy when you see bands that are, they're still trying to do what they did 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I go, oh, that's really not for me. You know, that's, and I don't think it's for Mike and Gil either. Like, I think they look at that and go, nah, that's not.
Well, and I was just going to say, you guys are all three of you masters of reinvention, not replication. So I think a lot of the generations of fans, the ones that maybe had an opportunity to see you, you know, at Canada's Wonderland, you know, or Mossport, you know, they're not expecting that moment, but they just want to enjoy something with you. So who knows, maybe it's a stripped down, I don't know, I'll just throw it out there, a residency at Massey would be really cool.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, and we live in that, in a social media age where there are things you can do and you can make them available to people, and there's an immediacy that can happen. There's a currency and a vitality to creativity that can happen, and I'm all for that. You know, like I like the idea of that. It's just a question of you know, dignity, interest into it. You know, and the other thing is having to live up to the name. That's always been an interesting thing about being in a band that called itself Triumph. Like, how do you do something? It's no good if you just do it halfway, and it's no good if you just do it in a measured kind of, like, no, it's got to kind of be something special. It's got to be bigger than life, else it's not Triumph. That's the way Triumph did things, you know? So, yeah, that enters into the equation too.
And as I noted before, we're living right now in a time of extreme uncertainty. And maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it gives everybody an opportunity, as I said before, to kind of see that pitch coming in a little bit slower. We'll wait and see what the documentary brings. You know, there are going to be memories flooding back for everybody. So many moments that will be told over the course of that. And, you know, we're still a little ways away from just kind of figuring out what 2021, 2022, 23, 24, 25 are going to look like, right? And as you said before, you know, the world has gone virtual over the last 18 months. And while we miss that human connection, the good ones have still been able to come through the screen at us and still grab us by the heart. You mentioned the memoir very briefly. I just wanted to congratulate you. I can't wait to read all the chapters on 45 years of marriage. Congratulations. So that was July.
Yes.
That's amazing. Amazing. I bring that up because I'm still very much in the euphoric rose-colored glasses honeymooner stage. My fiance, now wife, and I just got married last week. So.
Oh, congratulations. That's great. My son is getting married next weekend, and I'm singing a Queen song for their first dance. You're my best friend.
Oh, I was just going to ask if it was somebody I love or you're my best friend. That's incredible.
Yeah. And I'm going to do a sort of a swinging Buble version.
I love it. That's that's the thing is that if anybody can pull that off, it's you, because you've done so many variations of who you are. You've got so many different styles to choose from. I love it.
I'm going to tell you this too, and this will be part of the memoir, and this might even be in the documentary. I'm not sure, but when the offer came to join Triumph, my girlfriend and I wanted to move out and live together, but you know, we didn't have a lot of money and stuff. And I said to the Triumph guys, well, whether we work or not, can you guarantee me $175 a week? You know, because that would be my share of rent and groceries. And they went, and I could move out of my parents' house. And they went, yeah, Rick, we'll guarantee $175 a week. And so, you know, I'm not a word of a lie. I did not join Triumph because I went, oh boy, you know, my ticket to the stars. Like, I joined Triumph because it was going to be a steady paycheck so that my girlfriend and I could move out and live together. We lived together for a year, less than a year, from September of 75. And then we got married in July of 76. And yeah, I've been married to her ever since. So in truth, you know, I joined Triumph so that I could, for a marriage. That's what I did. You know, that's the way I think, you know. So, and I think the other guys in Triumph, they kind of go, yeah, that's Rick. That's Rick right down to the ground, you know.
And four and a half decades later, still going strong, which is the greatest Triumph at all. There you go. You've lived up to the name. I love it. Rock and Roll Machine premieres this Friday. Toronto International Film Festival. You can get all the details at tiff.net, and then watch for it on Crave TV as a Crave original afterwards. Rick, I could sit here and talk to you all day long, but you've got better things to do. So thanks again.
Thanks, Jay. I've enjoyed it.